Welcome to Outreach Church. Thanks for checking out this week's message. To hear more, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or visit outreachchurch.net for downloads and service information.
Amen. What a privilege to get to join with God and seeing His kingdom come and seeing people come alive. Like, we were singing that, come alive, come alive. I was just thinking about how when Ezekiel looks at the valley of dry bones, it's like there's nothing there that could live. But sometimes when we get to a place where everything's stripped away, it's like the perfect place for the Lord to come and breathe on us and actually come alive and come really alive. Like sometimes it has to come to that, right? Where everything just gets stripped away and we're down to the bones. And then the Spirit of God comes and breathes. And all of a sudden, a fully functioning man after God's heart stands where once there was just bones. Come on, don't just lay there. Don't just lay there and call it a season of rest. Press into Him. Seek after Him. Pursue Him. Let Him breathe on you. Come on, every time He breathes on something, it comes to life. It's why Adam stood up when he breathed into dirt. How could the breath of God come into something and it not come alive? Like, come on. I picture Jesus laying in the grave dead. And I picture that breath that God breathed into Adam, that Jesus breathed out when he was on the cross. And he said, into your hands I commend myself. And he gave up the ghost. He breathed his last breath. And I picture the Father being there just receiving that breath back in. And then after 3 days, that breath came into that tomb. And once again, man stood fully alive. Come on, maybe that dark place that you're in is just a place where you're waiting on the breath of God. Maybe that's what you need more than anything, is for Him to just breathe and things come back to life. You guys like our new chairs? Why are you laughing? I think they're amazing. They look good, and I don't have to sit in it very long because it's worship, and then I'm up here preaching. So I'm just kidding. These aren't our new chairs. We were supposed to have chairs here last week, new ones, because we moved some over there, and we went ahead and gave away to other ministries all of our old chairs and then found out that we couldn't get the new chairs in, and so we had to have rental chairs brought in. But the new chairs will be here this week, and they're amazing, and they're comfortable, and they're way better than this. So you just have to suffer through one service. How are you guys doing? You doing good? Yeah. My name's Roy. I get the privilege of pastoring. I'm so thankful to be part of this family of God. I look around, I see all the amazing people here, and it just makes me so excited, because why would God bring this many people that are chasing after His heart together unless He has something incredible that He's wanting to do? I look around and I'm just so encouraged when I see all of you guys, because I'm like, I know some of you, and those of you that I don't, I'm sure you're just as amazing, but man, I know what's in your hearts. I know what's been spoke over your lives. I know what you carry, and I'm like, God, what are you doing? And I love it. It's so amazing to get to be part of this. My wife Patty and I, just every day we talk about how blessed we are to get to be part of what God's doing. I have a word this morning. It's pretty simple, but I think it's pretty specific for people. I planned to preach on something different. I went in the sauna thinking about the story of how Abraham's father, Terah, was called out of the Ur of Chaldeans and was supposed to go to Canaan. And instead, he got about halfway there in a land called Haran and decided to stay there. And I was thinking, it really struck me. I was thinking about that. I was thinking, man, it's so weird that he would get halfway to where God called him to be and then decide to not go any further. Like, the only reason he left is because he had a word of the Lord. So the only reason you should stop is by a word of the Lord. Like, if He calls you into something and you leave by His word, the only reason you should stop doing what you're doing is by another word from the Lord. And the Lord never told him to stay in Haran. And you know what that place, the name Haran means? It means parched. And I looked at it, I was thinking about it, I looked where it is. It's right on the river. It's in like a lush, like, river basin where they could grow crops, and it's not a dry place at all. But I was thinking, man, you could be surrounded by water and be completely dry if you're in a place that God didn't call you to be. Because it's not the outside circumstances that matter, it's obedience to the Lord and being where He's called you to be. And so I was just thinking about how it's like, man, and the amazing thing about it is like God still wanted that family to go to Canaan. So if his dad wouldn't do it, he came to Abram and said, all right, Abram, you're the man now. How like the Lord will get what he wants. Your disobedience won't stop him from getting what he wants. It'll just stop you from being part of it. And I was just thinking like, man, God, I don't ever want my son to have to finish a journey that I was supposed to finish. I don't want Jackson having to walk out things that I was supposed to walk out. I don't want Aaliyah having to walk out things I was supposed to walk out. I want them to start where they were supposed to start because I finished where I was supposed to finish. I want to finish where I'm supposed to finish so that my children can start where they were supposed to start. I want to finish where I'm supposed to finish pastoring so the next person can start where he's supposed to start. But I'm not going to preach on that. Because while I was in there, I got ambushed with this idea, and I felt like it's specifically for some people because I feel like the Lord is restoring things right now. I feel like things that were lost 10, 15, 20 years ago, the Lord is, right now, he's breathing on those things and he's restoring those things because he hasn't given up on you, even if you thought you gave up on him. Like, he hasn't changed his mind about you. He never will. He believes that you are who he created you to be from the beginning. He sees the intention, the purpose, and the value in your life, even when you don't. And he's never changed his mind about you. He's never given up on you. And I feel like right now, there's just this grace where it's like, man, he wants to breathe on things and bring them back to life. And so if you have your Bibles, you can open them to Genesis 50, but we won't get there till the end of the service. But, we won't. I just want you to know I'm going to preach out of the Bible. But I was thinking about Jacob, right? Jacob has a dream. And Jacob gets this dream where the other bow to him and he interprets it because he has a gift of dream interpretation. And so in childlike zeal and in innocence and excitement, he runs to go and share the dream with his brothers. Maybe not the wisest thing to do, right? Like maybe consider who you share your dreams with. Just because it's from the Lord doesn't mean it's for everyone. You want people that when you share your dream, they have their own dream of God so that your dream doesn't make them feel insecure or threatened. They actually encourage you in yours because they're busy in the one that God's given them. They don't see your dream in competition with their dream. In fact, they probably would see it and say, wow, that's amazing, and talk about what God's called them into and encourage you into that. You need those people in your life. But they don't respond that way, and maybe older brother hearing younger brother's gonna bow isn't a good thing to hear. I don't know, maybe it didn't feel good in the moment. And so they decide they're gonna kill him. And they take him and they throw him into a pit. And then the good guy in the story says, well, instead of killing him, let's just sell him into slavery. Like, you're having a bad day when the good guy is the one that wants to sell you in slavery. That's a bad day. And so he's in a pit, and I was just thinking how, man, it probably was really easy at that time when he's in the pit for Joseph to rely on God. Like, when you're in a dark place and you're in a pit and you didn't get there by anything wrong either. With childlike zeal and innocence, the gifting on your life, people not responding well to it and people not receiving it well, and jealousy and insecurity and all those things, that's the reason he's in that pit. And it's dark and you can't see anything. And there's no way that you can get out on your own. And sometimes in those times, it's really easy to rely on God because you don't have anything else to rely on. But then he doesn't stay in the pit. Then he actually gets put into Potiphar's house. And all of a sudden, because he gets sold into slavery to Potiphar, he doesn't end up out in the field making bricks. He doesn't end up out in the field threshing wheat. He ends up in a house of a man who actually serves Pharaoh, a powerful man. And he ends up inside of his home. And he actually ends up, after a while, Potiphar recognizes the favor on his life. Because even people that don't believe in your God will recognize favor on your life, even if they don't know what it is. And they see the way that he lives. They see the way he conducts himself. I'm telling you, people will see the Lord on you even if they don't know the Lord. And they recognize it. And you find, that's what it says, Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and favor with God and with men. Because favor with God on your life will lead to favor with men. It'll also lead to persecution from men. Yeah. It's a double-edged sword, right? Like, the same thing that brings you favor with one person brings you persecution from another. That's why don't live for man's favor and don't be crushed by their persecution. Just go after the Lord. And when favor finds you, it finds you. And so Potiphar, after a while, he just starts trusting Joseph. And he says, I'm going to put you over my entire house. Puts him in charge of everything. But there's a catch. Potiphar's got a wife that wants to sleep with Joseph. And from the outside looking in, if Joseph's not careful, he can start thinking, maybe this is how the dream happens. Maybe this is how I get into my inn with Pharaoh. Maybe this is how I find favor with Pharaoh and I get to that place of being on the throne and sitting in the palace because this man is friends with Pharaoh. He's his bodyguard. Certainly if I'm here long enough, eventually I'll build a relationship with Pharaoh and maybe God will open a door for me to talk or maybe I'll be able to work my way in. And outside looking in, it's everything that he dreamed of while he's in the pit is happening in Potiphar's house. He's given power over people and authority over stuff. He has a great life. He's second only to one of the most powerful men in the country, and yet if he is to stay there, he has to sacrifice his integrity and who he is. I promise you, the Lord will never ask you to sacrifice your integrity to fulfill the dream over your life. There's no compromise he's going to call you to. It's not the Lord's way. And so she's coming to Joseph over and over again, sleep with me, sleep with me. He's an honorable man. He says, no. Sleep with me, no, I can't. He says, how can I do that? He's entrusted me with this power and given me authority over everything besides you. You're his wife, I can't do that. That's the one thing I'm not allowed to do. I can't violate myself, I can't violate his trust, I can't do that. And she just gets more and more desperate for him, and finally one day she grabs a hold of his cloak and she's begging him, sleep with me. And he says, I can't. And he knows other people are coming. It doesn't look good. And so he flees. Listen, it's okay to run away when you know that something doesn't look good. You know, that sexual immorality is the one thing the Bible tells you to flee. Every other thing, it says, resist the devil, submit yourself to God, resist the devil, and he'll flee. Why? Because sometimes you have to remove yourself from the situation. Sometimes you have to get away from that place. So he runs out, and she's still got his cloak. And the men come in, and she says, look what this Hebrew boy has done to me. He came, he wanted to sleep with me. She's lying about him. He tried to sleep with me, and I told him I wouldn't, and he heard you guys coming, and he took off, but he left his cloak here. And she just completely slanders him, completely lies about him. And Potiphar hears this, and he becomes angry. And he has Joseph thrown into prison. See, Potiphar's house is a place that looks like the dream, but it's not. It's an imitation. And I feel like there's people who you thought you made it, but you found out after a while you were in Potiphar's house. And the only way you would have been able to stay was to sacrifice your integrity and compromise. Whether that was with a job, a relationship, a church, whatever it was. And I feel like what happens is the enemy would love for you to turn your back on the very thing that landed you in prison. I can imagine when Joseph is in prison that the enemy comes to him and says, what's this whole integrity thing getting you? Like when he's in the pit, I'm sure the enemy was like, that's what happens when you use the gift of God on your life. If this is what it is to use a gifting on your life, what good is that? I can remember when I was first started pastoring, something happened. It was an attack against our family. I see it for what it was. I saw it for what it was then. And I know what it was for. It was to try to get me to say, if this is what happens when you serve the Lord, you can have it. And give up on the dream that God put in my heart. And be discouraged and turn my back on the very thing that God created me for. It's happened over and over again. don't get discouraged by it, and don't let the thing that don't let that cause you to take it personally and turn your back on your gifting and on the calling of God over your life, because that's what the enemy wants. That's why that thing came. It came to try to steal the dream of God out of your heart and the calling of God off of your life, and to get you to turn your back and say, if this is what it gets me to do the right thing, if this is what it gets, like, think about it. You think the enemy didn't come to Joseph and say, you idiot, you should have just slept with her. You'd still be there. You wouldn't be in prison. And who would have blamed you? She's the one that started it anyways. And her husband's never around. He doesn't even take care of her. I'm sure there was some justification the enemy was trying to have going on in his mind, but Joseph wouldn't sell himself for that. So he ends up in prison. Listen, you would rather be in prison with the Lord than in Potiphar's house with his wife. I promise you, you would rather be in prison with the Lord than in Potiphar's house with his wife. And so now Joseph's in prison. And the prison keeper sees the favor of God on his life, puts him in charge of the prison. And in there, he meets a man who's a butler. I want to say this before I go on too much further, because I wanted to let you know this. If Joseph takes the bait and thinks, well, if I sleep with her, then I'll have even more power because now I have a secret over her and I could somehow use that and leverage that. And Potiphar already loves me, and so if I just stay here long enough, maybe I could tell her, I'll sleep with you, but you have to tell your husband to bring me in front of Pharaoh. And listen, I'm just here to tell you, don't ever feel like you have to work, manipulate, or connive to bring about the dream of God over your life. And here's the problem with doing that. If you get it that way, you have to keep it that way. And the most insecure leaders know that they are where they are because of what they've done. Most of the time when you find an insecure leader, it's because whether anyone else knows it or not, they know they got where they are because of something that they've done, because they politicked, they maneuvered, connived, you know, plotted, did whatever they did, and they know that, and so they know that they're not where they are because God simply opened a door and told them to walk through it. And the problem with that is that once you get there that way, then you have to stay there that way. And so they're always worried about who's coming through the door behind them. And they're insecure, and when people come around them that are talented, rather than celebrating it, they feel threatened by it. Come on, the way that you got treated probably had nothing to do with you and everything to do with them, no matter what they told you. I just feel like the Lord wants to just straighten some things out in hearts, because I feel like there's been such an attack of the enemy to try to get people to turn their back on the very thing they were created for. Because the devil's always after in its infancy, right? Like we talked about this, like you take an oak seed and you plant it in the ground, an acorn, and a little oak tree pops up. You can walk over and you can pluck it out of the ground with two fingers. Without any effort, you can just reach down, you can grab that oak tree, rip it up out of the ground and toss it and discard it. But you let that thing get established, you let it get sun and rain, and you let it get nutrients, and let those roots start going down deep, and pretty soon you've got something that you can't rip out of the ground with a bunch of your friends and equipment, because it's established. And the enemy knows that. He wants to come after it in its infancy. He wants to come after it when it's just beginning. And I'm telling you, so many people stepped into something in innocence and in childlike faith and with zeal and with nothing bad on their part, and they stepped into it, and the person or the people that they stepped into it with were insecure or were jealous or something was going on, and they got slapped on the hand, and instead of seeing it for what it was, they took it personally and they turned their back on that thing. But that thing still hasn't turned its back on you. I'm telling you, God wants to restore it. I'm telling you, He wants to restore it. Don't take the bait. Don't take it personally. So he's in prison, and he meets a butler and a baker. What does a butler do? Opens the door. What's a baker do? Presents things before kings. And pretty soon they have a dream, and this is the beautiful thing, is it doesn't matter what happens in Joseph's life, he can't walk away from the gifting on his life. And these men have dreams that trouble them, and they can't interpret them. And so Joseph, using the gifting that got him in prison, like, think about this, using the gift of interpreting dreams got him into the pit, which got him into slavery, which got him into the house, which got him into trouble, which got him into the prison. The very thing that got him into prison, he's still using and hasn't turned his back on. How many of us walk away from something if we go through a hard time or a trial or a hardship and say, well, if that's what it looks like to serve the Lord, then I'm fine, I'm good. Or if that's what it looks like to use my gifting, come on. He doesn't walk away from it because he can't. Because deep inside, he knows that the dream he has is from God. And so these men have these dreams and he interprets them. And then pretty soon when they're out, they end up in front of Pharaoh, and Pharaoh has a dream. And nobody can interpret it but the butler and the baker. They remember this man, and one of them goes to Pharaoh and he says, there is a Hebrew. He's in prison and he can interpret dreams. And so Pharaoh says, bring him to me. And he brings Joseph in front of him. And Joseph, using the gifting that got him in trouble, that got him scorned, that made his brothers hate him, that made them want to kill him, that made him end up in prison, using that same gifting, Joseph works his way into sitting in the palace by simply not turning his back on the gift of God that's over his life and being prepared to use it in and out of season. And now he's sitting in the palace and he's the right-hand man to Pharaoh. And if you turn to, I wrote this down. I want to read this to you. His gift being used even went up to this point. It caused him to not find favor and be met with jealousy is what gets him out of prison. Not letting what was done to him change him and not changing who he was to be accepted somewhere. If you have to be someone you're not to be accepted, you're not in the place that God has for you. If you would have to change who God created you to be in order to be accepted somewhere, then you're in the wrong place. We're called to unity, not uniformity. We all should look like one man, that's Jesus. Other than that, everybody's called to be who God created them to be, and it's going to look so different for so many people. Now, I feel like the Lord is just healing things. I feel it. It's coming out of my mouth. Like, let it heal your heart. You would have had to change who you were to be accepted there. Why do you want to be there? You'd be miserable the rest of your life trying to play a part rather than being the authentic you. You want to be somewhere where you can be the you that God created you to be and people actually celebrate it rather than be threatened by it. Come on, hear that. Like, it's permission to be fully you, fully who God created you to be. Not looking around and wondering if anyone else will think it's okay. Just be you. Be who God created you to be. There's a reason he created you to think that way and to look that way and to talk that way and to act that way. He created you for a purpose. If he wanted me, you would all look like me. Or if he wanted just you, we'd all look like you. But no, he wanted every single one of us. He created every single one of us. And he put his spirit inside of us. And every one of us reflect the heart of God to a different set of people in different ways. And man, if everybody would just be content with who God created them to be, you'd be celebrating who God created other people to be. You wouldn't be insecure when other talented people came around. You'd be stoked because you'd look around and think, man, God must be doing something amazing to send this many talented people. And rather than being threatened, you'd be excited. And you'd promote and encourage and uplift. Why? You know what? I can be honest. I can tell you. I told them no the first three times they asked me to pastor the church. I didn't want to be a pastor. I loved being a businessman. I loved being in business with my best friend. Every day we woke up and worked together, and I never once didn't want to go to work. I loved what I was doing. I loved preaching, seeking the Lord. I was still going to do that, but I just didn't want to take on the pastoring thing. I didn't know. I didn't think I was ready for it. I just said no. Even in the last board meeting where they were like proposing it, I told them when two of the board members disagreed and they were kind of arguing about it, I said, guys, I'll make it easy. I don't want it. And I walked out of the room. And one of the elders came and grabbed me and brought me back in and said, don't leave. And he just said to the other guys, he said, look, instead of trying to figure this out amongst ourselves, why don't we all just take 3 days and get alone with the Lord and not talk to each other and pray? And we'll come back together in 3 days, and if we all haven't heard the Lord say the same thing, we'll put a lock on the door, we'll sell the church, and we'll give the money to charity and tell people to go somewhere else. But if we do all hear the Lord say the same thing, we'll do that. And I remember thinking, I kind of have an out here because those two guys really don't want me to be the pastor. They thought I was too young, I hadn't been to seminary, and they thought that my idea of church was a little different than what they wanted. Then we got back together in a room 3 days later, and all seven of the men, including two of them, that said, I won't attend here because I think the direction of the church will go will be different than my idea of church. It wasn't like heresy stuff. It's not like I was like preaching another Jesus or anything like that. It's just style-wise and whatever. They said, I won't attend here because I think it will go in a different direction, but I do feel like God's saying you're the man that's supposed to pastor this church. And all seven of them said the same thing. I know that I got here because the Lord put me here. So the only reason I'm leaving is if I disqualify myself or if the Lord tells me to leave. So when talented people come around, that's not a threat to me. It's an encouragement to me. I'm like, God, what are you doing that you would send this many amazing people? My biggest fear is, God, help me to steward the gifting and talents and calling on their lives well. Not so they serve me, so that they serve the Lord and build the kingdom. I just want to tell you that. Like, I'm not just church. This happens in business. This happens in relationships. People see you for what you can do for them. But when you start doing the thing you were called to do and other people start to notice it, if they're not secure in their leadership and they don't know that they are where they are because God put them there. That's what Paul said. Who I am by the grace of God. Paul had no problem promoting other people because he knew he got where he was because of the Lord. So then Genesis 50, right? You there, verse 18? Then his brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. The dream is coming to pass. After all these years, the dream is coming to pass. But Joseph said to them, do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. So therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. The first thing that stands out to me, as I was meditating on that scripture, I saw a picture. And I'm sharing this for whoever this is for. Maybe it's for a lot of people. I saw people who felt like they had been stabbed in the back. And they were hurt by it, and they were tempted to become bitter and angry. But I walked around behind them, and I just was looking in a vision. I walked around behind them, and I saw that there was a knife in their back, but it was the Lord digging hooks out of them to set them free from where they were. And what you thought was people stabbing you in the back was actually the hand of the Lord cutting things off of you to release you from a place that you were never meant to be so that you could be where he called you to be. You weren't stabbed in the back. I mean, people might have thought they were stabbing you in the back, but what they meant for evil, God meant for good. And that word meant there is pretty amazing when you look at it in the original language. When it's used in a malicious way, it means to contrive or to plot. So when he says it to the brothers, he says, you contrived and plotted this for evil. But when it's not used in the malicious way, when it's used in the regular tense, it means to weave or to fabricate. So look what Joseph's saying to them. You plotted and contrived this for evil, but the Lord took it and he actually weaved it and made it something beautiful. Come on, what if the fabric of your life is made up of a bunch of threads that were meant for evil that God took because you kept your heart in a place of surrender, you didn't take the bait, you didn't get bitter and angry and unforgiving, and you actually let it propel you into what God had for you. And at the end of your life, when you look back, the fabric of your life is made up of all these threads, and some of them were the Lord from the beginning, and some of them were the enemy that the Lord took and said, I see your yielded heart. I'll take what he meant for evil and I'll work it for good. I'll make something beautiful out of it. That's what Joseph said. He said, look, you guys meant this. You plotted this. You fabricated, or you contrived this for evil. My father took and he wove it and he made it beautiful and he made it good to bring about this result, not just for my blessing, but for the blessing of so many other people. Come on, don't take the bait. I remember a while ago, I had a friend, a really good friend. I don't share a ton of personal stories just because I'm like, man, what people might know or stuff like that, but I felt like I needed to share this. Like, I had a really, really good friend that I did life with and hung out with, and we had an awesome friendship, or so I thought, and I can say on my end, I was a true friend to him. I treated him honestly and kindly. I loved him. I spoke truth to him. I shared my revelation with him. Everything the Lord showed me with revelation, I'd call him up excited and share it with him. And I can say that I blessed him. And I would find out down the road that for a while there, at the end of our relationship, I was blessing him, and the whole time he was cursing me behind my back. And I heard a teaching recently, someone mentioned it, they referenced it and said, yeah, I heard someone say that, you know, if somebody has wronged you, go bless them and like financially or something like that and watch what it does for you. And it felt so gross when I heard that because I thought, man, we don't bless people for what it does for us. That's not blessing. That's manipulating. That's treating it like an investment with an expectation of return. No, what if blessing those who curse you means this? You bless everybody you come into contact with because you've become like Jesus. And then at the end of your life, you look back and realize they were cursing me and the whole time I was blessing them. And then all of a sudden, one day you see that the seeds that you sowed into their life begin to bear beautiful fruit. And even if you don't get to be part of it, you know that they are blessed because they knew you, because Jesus lived inside of you, and because you didn't take the bait, you didn't get bitter, you didn't take it personally, and you continued to bless them even when you found out they were cursing you. Because at the end of my life, I care more about people looking like Jesus than I do about them saying nice things about me. Maybe that's how we bless those who curse you. Maybe it's not going out and saying, all right, they said something, I'm going to go bless them. No, like, what if it's about just saying, like, it doesn't matter if you curse me or not, I'm going to bless you because Jesus lives in me. And how could you not be blessed when you come into contact with him? Because it's not I that lives, but Christ that lives in me. Come on, that's what we're called to. That's the life we're called to. And so I want to pray for people this morning. I want to pray specifically for people that in innocence and with a good heart and good intentions, you stepped out and you got your hand smacked because of jealousy and insecurity, because of people not being who they were supposed to be. And it caused you to shrink back, and you've stepped away, and you've walked away from that thing, and you've maybe even despised it. You said, if that's what it means to serve the Lord, then I'm good. If that's what it means to use my gifts, then I'm good. If this is what it cost me, I don't know if it's worth it. There's people who have said these things, and you've stepped away from things, whether it's relationships, whether it's business stuff, whether it's a talent or a gifting, whether it's church, whether it's ministry, whatever it is. If you stepped out and somebody responded like the brothers rather than like the father, I want to pray for you because God wants to heal that, because we need you back in the game. We need you back in the kingdom game. We need you back building the kingdom. We need you using that thing that you despised. We need you using that thing that you thought was a source of pain. And every day when you do, the enemy has to pay for what he did. Come on, it's time to make him pay. It's time to see things restored and healed. It's been too long. You're carrying around a story of hurt from 15 years ago. Man, life has passed by so fast. Don't let another 15 years go by and you'd be the product of what someone did or didn't do 15 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Not when God's saying, hey, it's okay. I love you. I believe in you. I never changed my mind about you. Come on, if that's you and you know who I'm talking to here in the overflow, even if you're at home watching, just stand up where you are. We're going to pray for you. Because I know the Lord wants to heal stuff. Come on, yeah. Just stand up right where you're at. Come on, he wants to heal things. He wants to restore things. He wants dreams to come back alive. Like right now, I see it. The valley of dry bones is starting to get skin and bone and sinew back on it. And he's about to come and put the breath back in it. So come on, church family, look around. This is a basic of the faith, the laying on of hands.
Thanks for checking out this week's message. To hear more, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or visit outreachchurch.net for download.